Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info and always accurate information because it's the internet and everything you read on that's always true at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Matt, the Minion. Mr. Minion, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, John?
I'm also well. This seems really, like, artificial right now. Like, perhaps we are trying too hard.
But it's not, which is
weird.
Weird.
That's what you were going to say. See, we've known each other too long.
Are we in the Twilight Zone?
No. No, we are not. Well, yeah, it is. So, we've got Cecil Birch is going to be joining us shortly to talk about the little nuances of in-fight weapon access, which we will get into in a minute, and some other things. This all stemmed off of an article that was posted online recently, and I'll get into that in a second. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, there was an article written by Darren Lasort, and I think I'm pronouncing his name right, and if I'm not, I apologize, who, by all accounts, is a really nice guy, has done a lot of really positive things for the Second Amendment movement. So I'm not saying anything at all about his character when I say he wrote an article that was absolutely terrible, in my opinion, about appendix carry. And it's actually the title of it is The Appendix Carry Craze. And it wasn't so much the point of the article, because, I mean, honestly, he was just saying, I don't like appendix carry, which I'm fine with, you know, and even though I personally do carry in that particular, and what we're talking about is where you carry the gun. If you imagine a clock face with directly forward being 12 o'clock, the classic place that most people carry if they're right-handed is going to be somewhere between 3 and 5 o'clock, so behind the hip. Appendix carry would be in front of the hip, anywhere from 12 o'clock to about 2 o'clock, 2:30, you're starting to get into this weird area of what are you doing? I don't know. There are pluses and minuses to everything that the detractors of appendix carry will point out, rightfully so, that it is very unforgiving of a mistake because the muzzle of the gun is generally pointed at either your femoral artery or your genitals, either one of which does not react very well to bullets. Not that really anything on you reacts well to bullets, but it is one of the places you can accidentally shoot yourself and have it prove to be very fatal very quickly. So anyway, the general premise of the article, like I said, was he didn't like appendix carry, which honestly, if he had left it at that, we'd not be talking about it. But there was some information contained in it that was just completely inaccurate. One of them being, you know, appendix carry is uncomfortable. That depends on the gear and it depends on the person, blah, 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 blah. But getting to the point, he also said that it was easier for someone to foul your draw if you carry appendix versus if you carry behind the hip. And that, to me, demonstrated a really huge lack of understanding about some things involved. So let's get someone on the air that knows what they're talking about. We'll get into the article a little bit more, and then we'll wander off the path into some other stuff. So joining us, Mr. Cecil Birch. Cecil, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, John?
Oh, can't complain. Not at all. So did I do a good job of leading up to kind of, we had talked about this a little bit beforehand, but that article, I'm pretty sure you read it as well and had the same comments as I did.
Exactly. And you know what? And I had the exact same thought process you did. If the guy had said, I don't like appendix carry, it doesn't work for me, and left it that, I'd be cool. Awesome. I'm never going to dictate what somebody should you know, do or not do with that kind of stuff. But again, then he goes to a usage area that he does not know about. Mm-hmm. And I know better.
Yeah.
He's wrong. He's flat out wrong.
Right. Well, and let's we'll back up just a second. So, why should people care about what your thoughts are on in-flight weapon access? Can you go over your background just a little bit?
Sure. I've been involved. I've been actively training martial arts, hand-to-hand fighting for going on 35 years now. I hate kind of saying that sometimes because then everybody gets to know exactly how old I am.
You're pretty old. It's amazing that you perform to the level you do. Anyway, keep throwing me softballs like that, Cecil. I appreciate it.
I'm really good at those.
Yeah.
I've been actively training. I've pretty much always been under the eye of a coach, of an instructor, all those 35 years. I've done all the cool guy, whatever the martial art magazines in the 80s and 90s said was the cool guy system. I trained in it and maybe even had instructor certs in it. For about the last 15 years or so, my focus has been what a lot of people refer to as a combat sports, boxing and all its offshoots like Thai boxing, wrestling, all its offshoots of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And the main reason is because I know that stuff works. I can apply it. I know it works. So that's always been my driver for training is I got to know it works when I need it to protect myself and my family. And then about 2006, 2007, I kind of met a couple people sort of coalescing around Craig Douglas and just trying to work over and put our heads together and deal with this idea of a multidisciplinary tactician and this integrated fighting conceptual model and try to figure out how to make this stuff work.
Right. Well, and for those that are not familiar, Craig Douglas, also known as South Narc, is the guy that is behind ECQC, which is Extreme Close Quarter Concepts. It's actually the class. I have a lot of people ask me what class I think everyone should take. And, you know, I am friends with most of the nationally known instructors at this point, or at least a high percentage of them. And, you know, setting that aside, Craig is probably the most recommended teacher on my part and certainly the most recommended class, just because, as you said, it is a class that you can see very clearly whether or not something is working, because you've got two different people both trying to win. There's not much room for the hocus pocus you see on the internet sometimes.
Absolutely. And the thing that I've always admired about Craig is that it's an open laboratory.
Right.
If somebody wants to come and say, you know, my system does this, or I came up with this technique, awesome, bring it in. Yep. Let's put it to the test. If it works, Craig will be the first one to support it.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, well, then it's not going to work, and he's not going to pretend that it suddenly magically did.
Right. Well, and that's something to be clear, too, for the rest of the show. And we've got about 40 seconds left in this segment. But the reason why I bring that up is because we're going to be talking about some things that are not, they are not hypotheticals. They are not really like ideas that we just sort of came up with or whatever. It's things that we've both seen in practice, how they happen. I mean, would you say that's fair?
Absolutely. I think I've been 12 ECQCs, either going through or assisting at.
I'm only up to two, but I'm gonna try to make it to some more. But we got to go to break. Like I said, when we get back, we're gonna discuss in-fight weapon access a little bit, go over that article a tiny bit, and then we'll get into some more interesting things. Right now, we're talking to Cecil Birch. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by the Paul E. Palooza 3 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 15th and 16th at the Raven Concealment Systems facility in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, visit Paul E. Palooza, PALOOZA.com. Remember, save the date, August 15th and 16th. So, we are talking with Cecil Birch about an article that was written. Just a small point of clarification, because I understood that it could be misconstrued sometime during the break. And I want to be very clear. I've taken ACQC once. I've observed part of number two. So that's for anyone listening that's going to be like, wait, what? So anyway, Cecil, are you still there?
I am here.
Excellent. Didn't want to get like called out as like saying things that were not true or anything like that. But anyway, so we were talking about why we're going to be talking about what we're going to be talking about. So the big tactical thing that in this article was his number one reason against appendix carry was that someone could foul a draw. And my understanding of this based on, like I said, having been through an ECQC, also having taken your class in the past, if someone's close enough to foul your draw, maybe you shouldn't be drawing in the first place.
Absolutely. If they're close enough to foul your draw, it matters not one bit where your weapon is, how it's carried. If they're close enough to foul your draw, they're going to foul your draw.
Right.
There's no magic on the placement.
Why is that? I mean, for me, when I was going into this before I've seen how it happens in person, I was kind of thought of, well, if I can get my gun out, I can fix the problem. True or false?
If you're far enough away.
All right.
The problem becomes how close is this person. If they're close enough, and it's always going to be, there's no hard and fast rule, but if they're close enough that they can half a step, a step, and they can touch you, how fast are you, how fast can you draw when they can, all they have to do is take that half step forward and reach out?
Right.
That's what people kind of forget. I don't know why, but there seems to be this idea that that person is just going to be motionless mm-hmm. while you go to do this. And we've seen it. It's not just in the training environment with the prevalence of, surveillance cameras and cell phone footage and all that kind of stuff. You can Google, this kind of stuff, and in 2 minutes you'll have
video evidence,
videos showing them.
Right. Well, and I think his contention was that you can shield the gun or shield the draw with your body, which you can't do with appendix carry, which, as a statement, yes, I guess that's correct, that you can put your body in between the gun and the individual that you're shooting, but you're doing a couple things there that strike me as a bad idea, and one of them would be turning your hips away from the guy that is rushing you, or girl, or whatever.
Absolutely.
Which is a bad decision for a couple of different reasons. But also, too, you still have to get the gun out in front of you to an extent to point it at them. Even if you're shooting from number two, if they're within arm's reach at that point and you've not tied them up, I mean, what's to stop them from, trying to take that gun from you at that point?
Well, and even worse, when people who don't understand the issue and what is entailed with that kind of entangled fight, reaching behind you to grab the gun is one of the worst things you can do. What keeps you from getting into a worse entanglement is having your elbows as close to the ribs as possible. That keeps you in a position that you can keep fighting and take the chance of maintaining a superior position. You let those elbows go out, he gets inside. I don't care how you're carrying your gun, you're not going to get to it because he is now controlling your limbs.
Well, and something else too, and once again, correct me if I'm wrong, and then this will sort of segue nicely into what should we do if we get into a fight. If you've got a hand behind you, it's kind of hard to bring it up and keep somebody from hitting you upside the head, isn't it?
Absolutely. So you're losing your positional control, your control of your limbs, your ability to keep from getting to a worse position. As you pointed out, you're putting your hips in a position that's going to be easier to get dumped on the ground, and you've got less protection for your head to keep the central processing unit working and keeping you fighting and solving the problem.
Right. Well, and like I said, this will probably be the last minute that we spend talking about the article, but just there were some things, like I said, that he mentioned that were just factually not accurate. And I don't think they were, malicious on his part or anything like that. He said he saw in a training event. I didn't, you know, I did not see the event that he was at. I have an idea that I could probably guess pretty accurately. It's easy to think something looks good when you're applying it on static targets that are not trying to win also. And I'll leave it at that. But so what should we be trying to do, I guess? Let's say we find ourselves in a position, our situational awareness has failed, our ability to manage an unknown contact, so keep someone away from us, has also failed. We find ourselves suddenly having someone encroaching on us. What are some things to think about?
The first thing is maintain control of your position. Do not, you've already screwed up. Do not make it worse.
Okay.
Stay as safe as you can in that situation. Stay in the fight. Stay conscious, which means protecting the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your hands and elbows in to control and to minimize his control over you. And don't be in a hurry to expose yourself to get to the next step.
Okay.
Ideally, create distance, if at all possible, or assume a position of such control that then you can access your weapon without him being able to foul it.
All right. So I guess even if we break that down even into a little bit more specific areas. So when you're talking about maintaining the position that you're in, if we're upright and mobile, we want to stay upright and mobile. If for whatever reason they've, you know, gotten the drop on us, hit us upside the head, or, you know, let's say we catch it out of the corner of our eye and we've defended against the initial attack. I mean, there's a little bit more minutia that we can get into there.
Sure.
As far as, should that be the number one concern as far as protecting the head?
Absolutely, because you need to stay conscious. It doesn't matter if he can foul your draw or if he can even get your gun if you're unconscious.
Okay.
At that point, he can do whatever he wants. He might not even know you have a gun. He'll just stomp your head.
Right.
At least if you're conscious, you can keep fighting. You know, you can stay in the fight and keep going and figure out the solution, work towards a solution.
Are there some things that we can try and do to sort of maximize our conscious retention ability? I just made up a phrase there, but
that was good.
Thank you. I try. It's like I do this. Are there some things that we can sort of work on to make it more likely that we're not going to get knocked out randomly?
Yeah, one of the things that that I teach and is this almost entire morning of one day of my weekend seminar coursework is hitting what we call a default cover position. And that's language that Craig Douglas came up with, and I think it's an incredibly resonant term, so I use it myself. The idea is as soon as possible, as soon as we're in this impacted situation, we screwed up or we realize we're about to screw up, wrap the head, the arms around the head to minimize the exposure to those one-touch knockout spots on the head, the back of the head, the side of the neck, minimize that whiplash of the jaw. Because if he's hitting you, if he's initiated the fight by hitting you, he's probably not going to hit you once.
Right.
Most likely, he's probably going to keep hitting you, whether it's with his hand, a club, whatever. And so you've already taken damage. Let's minimize the next step. Protect the head from taking any more of that damage that where just one glancing blow can turn the lights out. And then, ideally, from there, get inside his position where few people are good at fighting. And then we can work from there.
Right. So just surviving the initial assault.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say something without being specific as to who I'm directing it at. But So we're wanting to train ourselves to respond in a way that is beneficial versus reinforcing a natural response that we may or may not have when we're younger that is probably not helpful to us?
Well, number one, I know what you're talking about.
Yes. I'm trying to do this as deftly as I know how without naming any names or specifically calling anyone out.
Right. And the fact is, number one, there's too much research now that shows there is not one natural reaction. Sorry,
right.
That's just facts. Is there certain ones that can come up? Sure. But there's no guarantee that they're going to come up here, here, here. You can't base everything on that. There's actually a number of natural reactions.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all answer.
It's not a one-size-fits-all. It just is not. So, and the whole point of training anyway is to make ourselves, put ourselves in the best position possible.
Let me, and we'll get into that some more. We've got to go to break right now. We're talking with Cecil Burch. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearm needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we are talking with Cecil Burch about, you've just gone over the default position, Cecil, and we were discussing whether or not we should be training, you know, bad reactions that we may sometimes in certain situations have, or if we should be training to have an optimal reaction in all situations. What are your thoughts, just to reiterate, and then we'll move forward?
I would prefer to have as high a percentage technique, you know, application that covers me as over the broadest possible situations I can find myself in, and spend a little time training it.
Okay.
I think that's probably a better solution than almost going with the panic reaction and trying to base something off that.
Well,
I don't think that that's exactly the smartest way of doing stuff.
It seems like, if anything, it just reinforces that we're going to have a bad reaction, makes it a foregone conclusion.
Absolutely. And then if we then follow up, well, then how do we train anything?
Right.
I mean, we still got to train drawing the gun and shooting and doing all that. If we can do that, why can't we train in a good a good subconscious default reaction in the first place?
Right. So once we've, you know, survived the initial attack, we want to try and, like you said, keep the position that we're in. Just sort of change the tides of how the attack's going, sort of.
Yeah, we're already, you know, we assume that we've already screwed up. We assume that we've already in a bad place. Let's buy ourselves a couple extra seconds to get into a slightly better place that we can then say, oh, I'm in a fight. Here's what's going on. What is the next best step to take, as opposed to flailing around uselessly hoping I grab onto, or, you know, something falls my way.
Right. So we kind of want to stabilize where we're at.
Definitely want to stabilize. It's always, you know, and my jiu-jitsu coach always says this to me all the time. Your first obligation is to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
You've already messed up. Don't get into a worse one. Don't let yourself through a panic reaction or through trying to hurry up. You actually get deeper in that hole. You know, stay safe, stabilize in as good a position, in a good as situation as you can be, and then take the next step.
So, and that seems to be, at least when I've observed it happening in person, that seems to be where there's some confusion or some panic, I don't know. And where the gun or knife or whatever starts to come out early is right in that area there.
Yes.
Do you mind talking about why that's a bad idea? Just
generally, because we're already too close. If all he has to do to attach to us, to get into an entangled fight with us, is literally just touch us with his hand, not even having to move, not even having to shift, that is a faster reaction than you getting your gun out and shooting, or getting your knife out, or your OC spray, or your SAP, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take much longer than him going, ah, I now have your elbow, I now have your arm, I now have your head, etc.
So at that point, you've semi-introduced a weapon that you maybe have questionable control over at that point?
Absolutely. You're in a panic. You want to get, you know, too many people, that weapon of whatever it is the talisman. I get this out, and it will solve all my issues.
Right.
But if you don't have it fully in your control, it's partially in his control, just by definition.
Well, and the very first one-on-one evolution that I did at the ECQC that I attended, and the reason why I'm talking about this is because I watched it happen to me. You know, I got into a bad spot, tried to access a weapon because that's going to fix everything, and then ended up getting shot 6 or 7 times in the lower abdomen crotchular region with my own gun, which was problematic and embarrassing all at the same time. But would have killed me dead, and that's sort of a, you know, a bad thing there too. So what would be a better option then at that point is just gaining control of the other person?
Yes. Well, you know, again, this other terminology is positional dominance, and the idea, it's not even the position. People sometimes mistake the terminology for what it is. It's not the position, it's the control that you can gain in a particular position. So if I can control this person, if I can keep him from fouling my draw, if I can position him in a way that he's not able to drive into me, that he cannot interfere with what I'm going to do, if I can get that for long enough to get the weapon out into a good shooting position and crank off however many rounds you think would be a viable choice.
All of them?
Shooting one time is going to be good, so I would prefer to be able to shoot 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah, all of them. It's kind of like, how many lumens do I want my weapon-mounted light to have? All of them. You know, and I'm making a joke there, but that seems to be the other thing, too, is that a lot of people have this idea of how people react when they're shot that is not accurate, you know, in my experience at least.
Well, you've had enough of them on the show.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Jared Reston is my favorite example just because he was shot in the mouth with a .45 caliber death ray, fell down, said, well, that kind of wasn't pleasant, and then went on to kill the guy that did it. And he took 7 more rounds in the process, so he was shot quite a few times and still managed to win that fight. It seems like just a lot of the problems that are occurring when we start talking about things like this is that people start making definite statements about what will or will not happen without any information to back it?
Yes, absolutely. It's this dogmatic of this will happen.
So.
You can, especially if you don't have the background in that. You can't say the person is going to do this when I do that. If you've never paid attention to anybody getting shot, or never researched it, or you don't have a depth of understanding of grappling, so you don't know what happens when you position your hips this way in relation to him.
Right.
But so don't make that dogmatic statement.
Okay. And I, you know, I realize we're talking about a subject that for radio is difficult for a lot of people to picture, but the main point that I'm trying to get across here is that the, like you said, the tool that we have, whether it's a gun or a knife or whatever, is not what fixes the problem. It's the person working that tool that fixes the problem.
Absolutely, 100%. Now, that's a dogmatic statement I will totally support.
Okay. Well, only cis deal in absolutes, says Yoda, which is an absolute state. Anyway, hey, it's May 4th tomorrow, so I had to get at least one Star Wars reference in. So once we've sort of worked on positional dominance or gotten a better concept of that. Is the timing involved with accessing the weapon a little more clear at that point, or is that just something that we really need to work against another competitor, for lack of a better term?
Well, it definitely becomes more clear, but here's the thing about that kind of entanglement, that body-to-body contact, whether it's vertical or on the ground. There, it's so chaotic, and there are so many tiny variables that happen. Literally, if I move my elbow 3 degrees, that might be the difference between life or death in that entanglement. So you have to have resisting opponents that you can train with, because there's not going to be one answer. Oh, every time this happens, every time A happens, I'm going to do B. Well, yeah. Sometimes B works, sometimes C, sometimes D, sometimes E. And the only way you're going to get that is by, you know, for want of a better term, flight time.
Yeah. Yeah. So where should people start let's say they've come to realize that maybe their idea of what a shooting or gunfight looks like is not a pleasant experience and is not the way we would oftentimes like it to go. And that's the part that confuses me, is that when people start talking about what is arguably going to be the worst day of their life, they get very optimistic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they start talking about executing skills that they've never even practiced before.
I find that to be 100% true. I mean, we're already talking about not just the worst thing, but a low percentage anomaly for most of us. So your odds are already messed up. Mm-hmm. How can you then say, well,
I'm going to be lucky.
I'm going to do this great, but I'm going to win the lottery the rest of the time.
Right. Clearly your luck has decided that it's taking the day off. Or something, once you find yourself in that position. So when you see stuff, and we got about 50 seconds left, there seems to be a lot of online resources, 50 seconds left in this segment. There seems to be a lot of online resources that are giving you answers to these questions. What are some things to look for as far as maybe I should avoid this info or pay attention to this info?
Probably the number one is, are they willing to truly pressure test what they're talking about? Are they letting people matching up with another person or another, maybe two people as bad guys? Are you obviously have some safety gear and that kind of stuff, but the fact that you're saying, okay, you want to survive, you guys want to beat them, go, and don't have any limitations,
rules
on that.
Yeah. Let me interrupt just real quick, because we got to go to break. We're talking with Cecil Birch right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Hackstrike Steel Target System, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the arch frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Fit their steel targets with more than, 40,000 rounds at this point, probably?
Easy.
Of rifle and pistol ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at tacstrike.com. That is TACSTRIKE.com. So, we are talking with Cecil Birch about getting unlucky and having a bad day and finding ourselves in the not-sexy self-defense problem, the entangled gunfight. Or just entangled anything. Cecil, are you still there?
I absolutely am.
So going back to the appendix carry thing that was the impetus behind all of this, there seems to be some advantages with appendix carry if you find yourself in that situation. Weapons retention being one of them?
In general, I'm never going to say that hardware is ever going to be, a solution to problems.
Correct.
Or generally software. But I do think appendix has certain advantages that a lot of people don't realize. Yes, the gun's in front of you where it's easier for him to grab, but it's also in the best area that I can control. It's very difficult for me to even see what's on my hip or behind,
right,
let alone reach over. And even at that point, I probably only have one hand for the most part that can help with tension, you know, from the hip and back. But in front of me, I've got my elbows, I've got my both hands, I've got a lot more tools, as well as being aware of it.
Right. Well, and it seems like maybe the biggest cognitive dissonance I'm seeing, like, in this whole argument is that you're assuming the attack comes from directly in front of you.
Exactly.
And they don't always, or often, or really very rarely, I was going to say ever, but that's not true. Very rarely does someone, you know, stand directly in front of you and say, hey, we're going to fight now, and I'm going to try and kill you, and you can try and kill me back, and that's cool with me.
It's exactly. And if the guy is standing in front of you and reaches for your gun, it's going to be much easier to then go, oh, he's reaching for my gun, I better do something about it.
Right.
As opposed to the guy behind you who hits you over the head, stunned you, and now he's got a clear shot at that, you know, that your gun carried at 4 o'clock.
Right. The other thing that I mean, if we end up going to the ground, you know, aside from retention, access seems a little bit easier if we're talking about things that are carried in front of us.
Sure. I mean, the only time it would actually be a problem is if you're belly down. Well, if you're belly down, he's probably on your back anyway. So having the gun front or back is going to suck.
Right.
You know, at least in any other position on the ground, again, I'm going to be in control. It's going to be it's much easier to move and articulate my elbow a little bit, to reach down to my waist in front and to get that pistol out, to get that knife out.
Yeah. Well, and that was something that I kind of was shocked by because I had never really worked with one before I went and took ECQC. There wasn't a single situation that I couldn't deploy a fixed blade knife from the center line.
Yep.
And I found myself in all sorts of problematic positions because I'm honestly terrible on the ground. So it's not like I was starting off from about as bad of a deficit as you can start off from, and could still access that. What are some closing thoughts on all this, I guess, for you at least?
I guess the most important thing is you've got to get some actual training rather than pontificating on picture you saw or one training exercise you saw a video of. Actually get dirty. Find somebody who's actually doing the work. Get on the mat, get in the dirt, whatever, you know, however it's done, and actually experience what it's like. So the next time you say, oh, you can't get your gun out from there, well, at least you'll have been there, and then you have a better chance of saying yes or no.
Right. Well, and you know, and that's another thing that was talked about. I actually do a lot more work for this job than people think I do just because the show only plays on Sunday and all that. I've driven about 80,000 miles in the last 14, 15 months, carrying appendix the entire time. So one of the things that a lot of people will say that have never carried appendix, well, that can't be comfortable, or fat guys can't do it. It is comfortable, and as a fat guy, I seem to pull it off pretty okay. But the minion was talking during the break. Getting a holster actually designed around appendix carry is sort of the key thing there, right?
Absolutely. I remember doing this years ago and trying to figure out how to make it work, and you kind of cram in something, some inside waistband holster, and hope it works, and yeah, it's okay.
Right.
But, man, going to it, a custom built, not custom built, but a custom specific designed appendix holster, light and day difference.
Right. Right. We could talk about this. I didn't mean for it to turn into an appendix carry show or not. And hopefully some folks have gotten some more out of it than that. But, as far as if people want to get together with you and maybe take a class. You want to talk about some of the places you're going to be or some of the classes you're teaching coming up?
Sure. Let's see. In the end of May, I'm going to be in Hannibal, Missouri. June, I think I'm in Idaho.
You got something coming up in August, don't you?
Oh, August, yeah. I've got Lollapalooza.
Right.
Which I've already got the thumbs up from William April on the two blocks I'm going to teach. So that's really cool. And that was such a great experience last year. Everybody had such an awesome time, the instructors as well as the students. I'm doing that. I can't wait. And then I'll be in New Hampshire the weekend after that. So I'm like, I got a busy, fun August.
Your dance card's filling up.
It is filling up, which is cool. I like doing this, so it's fun for me.
Right. Are you allowed to say what the two lesson blocks you're going to be teaching are? Is that top secret still?
I don't know if it's top secret.
Go ahead.
One block will be on the technical execution of chokes, all kinds, rear naked, triangle, guillotine, and the correct way to do it. And then the next day will be how to actually apply it on somebody who's fighting back.
Well, and that seems like it'd be a really good class to dispel some of the myths surrounding whether or not a chokehold will kill someone or not.
Yep, and I'm hoping somebody will volunteer for me to choke them out.
You can do it to me, Cecil.
Awesome.
I'll say that live on air, so now I'm held to it. But
that'll be awesome.
Yeah, I know. Maybe we'll make it a charity thing. Maybe I don't know.
A good idea.
Yeah, isn't it? There's all sorts of people that want me to shut up anyway, so this will be a great way to get that done. But
3 seconds of John silence.
Oh, that's hard to get too. But anyway, man. Hey, I appreciate coming on the show tonight very much.
Thanks so much for asking me. It's always an honor to come on. You do a great job, and I listen every week anyway, so it was cool to be on.
Yeah, thanks, brother. I'm looking forward to you making me unconscious in August.
That's good.
Yeah, I know, right? All right. So, anyway, next week I'm not sure who we're talking to, but I'm sure it'll be awesome since it is every week. Make sure you check out our website at ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.